Hagerman did what he could to put Nathan's mind at rest over dinner at Delmonico's.
Most of the town believes you did what had to be done.
And what does the rest of it believe? That I'm just a killer with a badge?
Nobody's saying that.
And they're thinking it. This is the kind of thing that will be picked up by the newspapers, and there'll be a whole new crop of fast guns looking for me.
I must admit, I haven't considered that side of it. I'll speak to the town council and get you out of the public eye as fast as I can.
Once that was settled, there were Nathan's plans for the future to be considered.
I suppose you're still planning to ride to Dakota Territory.
I am, and the sooner the better.
You're still a ways from spring. Would you ride south again before you leave for Dakota?
I reckon. How far and for what purpose?
To Fort Elliott. You're to bring back the wagon and the teams that belonged to the Dismukes. The government wants them.
The government already has them. Fort Elliott is the government.
Fifth Army Headquarters wants them brought here to Dodge. And as for their reasons, don't ask me. I wasn't told, and I'm not about to ask.
Fort Elliott, Texas, January 24th, 1876.
In the military, the wheels turned slowly. The sorry episode with the Dismukes took place, I think, last September. I filed a report with Washington and inquired about the disposition of the confiscated wagon and teams. I had heard nothing until 3 days ago, when I received word the property was being returned to Dodge.
You haven't searched the wagon, then?
No, not beyond discovering the way they were traveling with a full case of dynamite. We would never search seized civilian wagons unless we were more than a little sure their loads were contraband.
I don't aim to waste any time getting the teams and wagon back to Dodge.
After Nathan and Empty again took supper with the enlisted men of Fort Elliott, for the lack of anything better to do, Nathan rode into Mobiti to the saloon. It was crowded for a Monday night, most of the patrons being soldiers. The one exception was a well-dressed man in a derby hat. While he was dressed like an Easterner, the thonged-down colt on his right hip belied that appearance. It was still early, and no games of chance were in progress. The women Nathan had brought from Dodge, Mamie, Cora, Winnie, and Eula, recognized Nathan.
Yoo-hoo, Mr. Stone!
There were other women, one of whom was with the stranger in the derby hat. Nathan had nothing better to do, so he remained at the bar talking to the friendly barkeep, who pointed out the man in the derby hat as Bat Masterson. The troublesome Sergeant King arrived before Nathan had finished a second beer. King seemed irate that Masterson was with that particular woman. Suddenly, King had his Colt in his left hand, and when he fired, the slug struck Masterson in the left arm. The ex-buffalo hunter rolled out of his chair, drawing his Colt just as King fired a second time. King's slug caught the girl in the back. She slumped across the table. From the floor, Masterson fired once. King stumbled. Masterson got to his feet. His Colt still in his hand, he stood over the dead Sergeant King as though considering shooting the man a second time, but instead he returned his Colt to its holster.
I'll ride to the fort and turn myself in, barkeep. I suppose there'll be an investigation, and I'd be obliged if those of you who witnessed what happened will speak on my behalf.
I saw it. He shot you before you made a move, and I'll go with you to the fort. I consider the commanding officer, Captain Selman, to be a friend. My name is Nathan Stone.
I've heard of you, and I'd be obliged if you'd speak to the captain. I expect we'd better go before he gets word of this through someone else.
Reaching the fort, Nathan had no trouble getting himself and Masterson in to see Captain Selman. Masterson removed his coat, revealing the bloody left sleeve of his shirt, while Nathan explained to the captain what Sergeant King had done.
I've seen this coming, but there was nothing I could do. Naturally, I'll have to file a report, but with the bartender and Stone as witnesses, it will be routine. Mr. Masterson, if you'll go to the dispensary, your wound will be attended to. You're welcome to stay the night and take breakfast with the enlisted men.
Thank you, Captain. I'll be riding on to Dodge in the morning after Molly has been laid to rest.
That's where I'm going, so I'll ride with you if you'd like the company.
I believe I would.
The next morning, Nathan tied his Gria behind the wagon, mounted the box, and led out to the north. Masterson rode alongside, while Empty loped ahead. After they had crossed the North Canadian, Masterson galloped ahead. Then he rode slowly back.
Is this the way you rode in from Dodge?
It is. I'm here to return the Dismuke's wagon and teams to Dodge, for reasons only the government knows.
You had 7 riders trailing you.
How do you know they were trailing me?
Because I didn't see their tracks until we crossed the North Canadian. That's where they veered off. If they weren't trailing you, why didn't they continue south the way they were headed?
I have no idea. Any more than I know why they'd be trailing me.
Well, maybe they know something you don't. Something about this wagon that makes it so valuable to the government.
I've been thinking about that. I learned the Dismukes were wanted by the law in Missouri, but I wasn't told why. There's a case of dynamite capped and fused here in the wagon.
Maybe we can add that to something I learned at Fort Griffin and come up with an answer. Now, last August, somewhere north of Sedalia, Missouri, a train was robbed. A military payroll, and a substantial one. While several of the thieves were killed, the payroll, in gold, was never recovered.
I know what you're leading up to, but I can't picture the Dismukes as being smart enough to pull that off.
I can. From what you told me about them going after Fort Elliott with dynamite, outlaws like the James and Younger gangs usually fell a tree across a railroad track or rip out a rail. But how do you reckon this bunch stopped the train and took that payroll near Sedalia?
Dynamite?
Dynamite. But it went beyond anything sensible men would even consider. They dynamited the track and, without warning, literally blew up the express car. A railroad man died in the express car, and 2 more were gunned down by the outlaws. It appears to have been the most brutal robbery of all time.
While the Dismukes didn't have the brains to set it up, I'd have to admit the brutal nature of it might have appealed to them. What I find hard to believe is that they managed to get their hands on the gold and get out of Missouri.
My friend, I'd bet everything I own, which isn't much, that this wagon has a fortune beneath the wagon box. I'd say the government only suspects it, but the 7 hombres that trailed you to the North Canadian are dead sure of it.
Your idea fits the little we know of the facts, and you've come about as far with me as you can afford to. Sensible thing for you to do is to ride on. This bunch, if they're still trailing me, won't bother you.
Given a choice, a man seldom does the sensible thing. If you were alone, they'd ride you down, flank you, and shoot you off the box. I have a .50 caliber Sharps Buffalo gun in the boot, and I promise you, I can hit a moving target from as far away as I can see it. So I'll just ride along with you, unless you object.
I'm pleased and honored to have you. Your being here will buy us some time. They'll wait until we stop for the night and come after us in the dark, but we have an edge.
The dynamite.
That and Empty, my dog. He'll warn us when they're coming. We're outnumbered now, but you'd be surprised how a couple sticks of dynamite with short fuses can even the odds.
How well I know. I learned to use this stuff when my brother and me was clearing right-of-way for the AT and SF. Later, when we took to hunting buffalo in West Texas, the dynamite we had left we took with us. So one day, the Comanches jumped us, and there must have been 50 to the 4 of us, and not a shred of cover. We all had our sharps, but after the first volley, they'd have ridden us down before we could have loaded. They knew it, and we knew it. But they didn't know about the dynamite. And there was still a few coals from our breakfast fire. We all grabbed a stick of dynamite, waiting for them to attack. And when they did, they split up and come at us from 2 directions. So we split up, 2 of us facing each group of attackers. And just as they were about to cut down on us, we touched our fuses to coals of fire and flung our dynamite.
Bad medicine.
Lord almighty, you wouldn't believe our luck. We unhorsed about 1/2 of them, including their medicine man, and all the horses ran like hell wouldn't have them. First time I ever seen Comanches afoot, running for their lives. Oh, my God, we guarded the rest of that dynamite like it was gold. And the Comanches never bothered us again.
The day wore on, and they saw nobody, but that meant little. Their pursuers, if they were being pursued, wouldn't risk being seen on the flat Kansas plain. They would know the limitations of a wagon and could easily catch up under the cover of darkness.
With a wagon, we're making good time. We're nearing a spring that's a good stopping place. I reckon we'll cook us some grub, boil some coffee, and get the fire out before dark.
But saving a coal or 2 for the dynamite.
They finished supper well before dark, and leaving the spring, Nathan climbed to the rim of the arroyo, where he searched the plains to the south. He saw nothing, forcing him to consider the possibility that his and Masterson's suspicions were groundless. But Nathan didn't believe that. The stolen payroll hadn't been recovered, and what more likely a hiding place than beneath the bed of the Dismuke's wagon?
Well, they won't show until it's good and dark. Do you aim to challenge them, or wait until they cut loose with their guns?
In situations like this, I generally let them open the ball, and then fire at their muzzle flashes. But there's only two of us, seven of them, and a chance they won't all cut loose with their guns. For that reason, we're fortunate to have the dynamite. It's the only way we can be sure that none of them will escape. I reckon we better move our bedrolls well away from the wagon. And in case they wait for moonrise, give them something to shoot at.
Two bedrolls were positioned beneath the arroyo's overhang, where they would be in shadow even after moonrise. Blankets were arranged so that they appeared to conceal sleeping men, and with the arroyo's rim directly above, the attackers would be forced to fire from the opposite rim.
Now, we'll settle down on that opposite bank and wait for them to come looking for us. Bring 4 sticks of the dynamite from the wagon, and I'll bring a few of these coals.
Empty followed them to their position, remaining only long enough to be sure that was where they intended to remain. Then he quickly disappeared.
He knows we're waiting for somebody.
He does, and he'll let us know they're coming long before they're even close.
Nathan broke up bits of bark, keeping their coals live. Not only might a sulfur match fail them at a critical moment, its flame could draw fire before they had a chance to light and throw the dynamite. The moon rose, and still there was no sign of the attackers or of Empty. There was no talk, for in the silence of the night, the slightest sound might carry for a great distance. When Empty returned, Nathan kept his eyes on the farthest rim of the arroyo. The men would have to be afoot, lest their horses betray their presence. When they came, they were belly down, their movement almost imperceptible. Nathan shielded the glowing coals with his hat, lest the sparking of the lighted dynamite fuses draw attention. He and Masterson lit their fuses at the same time, just as the attackers fired.
Now!
There was no more gunfire. Empty was gone, and Nathan did not make a move until the dog returned.
We can go over there now.
Nathan and Masterson rounded the upper end of the arroyo, above the spring, and when they reached the opposite bank, found 6 dead men. Their features were clear enough in the moonlight.
We lost one of them. He might have stayed with the horses.
Maybe. I'll backtrail him in the morning. When it comes to this, I don't like leaving loose ends. I reckon I'll have to search this bunch. There might be some evidence that will tie them in with the robbery. I don't recognize any of them, do you?
Nope.
Nathan's search produced nothing except a few gold eagles and double eagles, along with pocket knives, plug tobacco, and several bags of durum. Every man was armed, and all had died with their colts in their hands.
I'm tempted to pile them all in the wagon and deliver them to Dodge, but we're still 3 days out. Even if we could stand the smell, half the buzzards in Kansas would be trailing us.
The rest of the night passed uneventfully, and after breakfast, Nathan backtrailed the 6 men involved in the ill-fated ambush. There had been 7 riders, and the 7th had remained with the horses. When it had become obvious the bushwhacking had gone sour, he had ridden away, taking the extra horses with him. Nathan rode back to the wagon where Masterson waited.
They left 1 man with the horses, and when he lit out, he took the extra horses with him. He's riding east.
Well, he'll double back to Indian territory or ride on to Wichita. 1 man leading 6 horses wouldn't dare show up in Dodge.
Dodge City, Kansas, January 29, 1876. Quickly, Nathan told Hagerman of the attempted ambush, suggesting the possibility that the stolen military payroll might be concealed beneath the wagon box.
Oh, my God, I can't afford that kind of responsibility. I'll have to send some telegrams, get some answers.
The first thing you'd better do is get that wagon under lock and key or post some armed men. Of those 7 varmints trailing me intended to take the wagon, 1 escaped, and there may be others.
Would you?
No, I wouldn't. Now, I aim to have a good meal, a bath, and a good night's sleep. Tomorrow morning, I aim to ride north to Dakota Territory.
Leaving his horse at the livery, Nathan went on to Delmonico's. He was hungry, and the bath would have to wait. Empty loped on ahead, for the cooks knew him. Masterson was already there, and Nathan took a chair across the table from him.
A mite early for supper, but come supper time, we can eat again.
Not me.
I'll be taking the train to Kansas City in the morning, and I'll be turning in early.
I reckon I'll go on back to the Dodge House with you. I don't dare go back to Hagerman's office. He'll be looking for somebody to take a scattergun and bed down beside that wagon until somebody relieves him of it.
They reached the front door of the Dodge House. There was someone waiting in the shadow of the entranceway.
You there. Identify yourself.
I'm Vivian Stafford, and I want to speak to Nathan Stone.
I'm Nathan Stone. Step out here.
She had red hair that curled to her shoulders, blue eyes, and a sprinkling of freckles. Her paisley dress had faded with age and many washings, while her battered carpet bag was almost flat.
Miss Stafford, this is Bat Masterson, a friend of mine.
Pleased, ma'am. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Ma'am, if you haven't eaten, we can go to Delmonico's. I've already had supper, but I can stand some more coffee, then we'll talk.
No,
I'm buying, come on.
Empty followed, uncertain as to why they were returning to the cafe so soon. He held back when they went inside. Suspecting the girl's reluctance might stem from a lack of money, Nathan ordered for her. The waiter brought their coffee, and she held the cup with both hands to still their trembling. Nathan didn't press her, and when food was brought, she seemed to forget all about him. Not until she had finished eating did she have very much to say.
Thank you. I suppose you'd think I've never had a decent meal in my life. And that's near the truth. I hadn't eaten in 4 days. I had just enough money for a ticket to Dodge City.
You came here looking for me?
No, I'd never heard of you. I came west looking for my brother, and Mr. Hagerman at the depot said perhaps you could help me.
That's generous of him, but how can I help?
You're going to the new gold strike in Dakota Territory. I'm hoping my brother will be there.
Miss Stafford.
Call me Vivian, please.
Vivian. None of this is making any sense. Why don't you start at the beginning and tell me everything? I don't mean to meddle in your business, but if you're going to involve me, then I want the straight of it.
I'm from the Virginia side of Bristol. I was 16 when Harley, my only brother, joined the Confederacy. We'd given him up for dead when he finally returned the summer of 1866. But he was changed. Bitter, uncaring. He had been wounded, left for dead, and had been confined to a Yankee prison for months. He came home to find our father in poor health, mother losing her sight, and us living off the little we were able to grow in the garden. He went west seeking his fortune in the gold and silver mines, but we never saw him again. Father died in 73, and mother a year later.
So you stayed with them until their deaths?
Yes. There was nobody else. I have no one else, except Harley.
My God, he's been gone 10 years. He could be.
Dead. I realize that, but I must know.
Vivian, there are mines all over the frontier, from the silver mines of southern New Mexico territory to the gold fields of Montana. You haven't been to any of them, so why the rush to get to the new diggings in Dakota territory?
I must start somewhere, and you're going there.
You left home after your mother died, so it's taken you 2 years to work your way this far west.
Yes, and I know what you're getting at, so I might as well tell you. The day I left Virginia, I had only the clothes on my back. I begged food when I could, went hungry when I had to, and I learned a hard lesson. A woman alone becomes a drudge or a whore, and you don't earn traveling money scrubbing floors.
She looked at Nathan as though she expected him to be shocked, but his face betrayed nothing.
I know it's asking a lot, and I have no money, but I'm willing to pay in the only way that I can, Mr. Stone.
Call me Nathan, and I won't accept the kind of payment you're offering. I understand what you've had to do and your reasons for it, and I don't condemn you, but when it comes to a woman, she has to want me and I have to want her. It's just not the kind of thing that can be bought or sold.
For a long moment, unbelieving, she just looked at him. Then she buried her face in her hands.
Vivian, I didn't say I wouldn't help you.
But I have no money.
I'm not asking for any. Suppose I take you to Dakota Territory, to the gold diggings, and you're unable to find your brother. You'll still be alone in likely one of the rawest towns on the frontier.
Beyond that, I won't ask anything of you.
Tomorrow, I'll have Hagerman send a few telegrams. The AT&SF is the carrier for most of the mines in Colorado, and it may be possible to reach some of the superintendents of various mines. If your brother came west with an eye toward the mines, the nearest ones would be in Colorado. We might find somewhere to him there.
I don't understand you, Nathan Stone. You're spending your time and your money to help me, and when I try to pay in the only way I can, You don't want me?
I'm not saying I don't want you. I'm saying that if what you're offering me is only a means of paying your debts, then I don't want it. Is that so hard to understand?
Not when you put it that way. The war started when I was barely 16, and I had no experience with men until I left Virginia. I don't know how to be a woman to have a man want me for anything besides that.
I'll get you a room at the Dodge House. We may be here several days waiting for replies to those telegrams.
I appreciate your kindness, but I don't like being a burden. I could sleep on the floor of your room. I've slept on the ground.
Well, so have I, and it helps me appreciate a bed when I can get one. I'll rent you a room with your own bed.
Nathan was awake well before first light.
Hello? Is it morning?
Nathan was surprised to find her door unlocked. He found her sitting on the bed, stark naked, her head in her hands. Thinking something was the matter with her, he stepped inside and put a blanket around her shoulders.
Vivian, is anything wrong?
No, I was just so tired. I didn't realize it until I lay down. I don't want to get up, but I know I must.
Well, yes, unless you don't want breakfast.
You don't know just how much I want it. Yesterday, you bought me the first decent meal I'd had in months.
Knock on my door when you're ready.
Sit down. If you leave me alone, I might go back to sleep.
Nathan and Vivian were in the Dodge House drinking coffee when Hagerman brought a telegram from the Silver Slipper Mine.
I can't join you. I just wanted to give you this.
Harley Stafford shot and killed a miner. Stop. Served 2 years in territorial prison. Stop. Released February last year. Stop.
Now we know he's probably not in Colorado.
Where are the next nearest mines?
From Denver. One direction's about equal to another. There are mines in Nevada, a few in southern Arizona and New Mexico territories, and a large number to the north in Montana territory.
Then there's no way of knowing where he might have gone? Where he is?
No. Probably the only reason there was a record of him in Colorado was because of the killing and a prison sentence. If I'd been in his boots, I'd have lit out for Montana.
So that's probably where he is now.
I doubt it. While the diggings there were prime in 64 and 65, that's been 10 years. I reckon it'd be slim pickings for an hombre new to the territory with hopes of staking a claim. We've eliminated Colorado, and if he's interested in mining, what would be more promising than a new strike?
Which would take him to the Dakotas.
It looks more promising, assuming that he's left Colorado. Tomorrow we'll ride out. That is, if you can ride, can you?
Yes, but I...
You need a horse, a saddle, boots, and riding clothes.
Yes. All I have to my name is that long dress, and I'd as soon straddle a horse naked as riding that.
We'll get you some Levi's and flannel shirts, and you'll need a heavy coat. When we reach the diggings, we'll be 500 miles farther north.
They went to Rufus Langley's Mercantile and bought everything Vivian needed except a horse and saddle. At the livery, Nathan bought a second-hand saddle and a bay horse. Back at the Dodge House, they read the newspapers Nathan had bought.
Well, I never would have believed it. Wild Bill Hickok's married.
There are worse things that can happen to a man. Do you know him?
Yes, I know him well. According to this paper, he's in St. Louis and plans to take an expedition to Dakota Territory, to the gold fields.
Perhaps you'll see him there. It sounds like an exciting place. I've never been to a gold-crazy boom town.
God knows who we'll find there. Tell me something about your brother, Harley.
He was 17 when he went to war. When he came back, he didn't talk about it. He was moody, walked with a limp. He was wounded during one of the last big battles before Lee's surrender. When he got home for the little time he stayed, he almost never slept. He'd sit on the porch way into the night, playing the French harp. His favorite song was Barbara Allen, and he played it over and over.
Barbara Allen. Redheaded as a woodpecker and always blowing on his harp. By God, Vivian, I knew him, but not by his name. Because of that old song, everybody called him Barb. The Yanks purely gave us hell, and his platoon got it the day ahead of mine. We were told his platoon had been wiped out to the last man.
But not Harley. His wounds must have been terrible, but he wouldn't talk about them. A few days after he came home, I slipped away and found him bathing in the creek. His legs from the knees down were no more than skin stretched over the bone. There were scars all over him, with a large one on his back extending down his left side.
Saber wound. God, I didn't have any wounds compared to his.
I'm so excited you actually knew Harley. It makes me feel closer to him just being with you.
You should get to bed. We'll need to turn in early so we can get an early start in the morning.
I'm ashamed of myself being such a burden. I told you, I could sleep on the floor in your room.
Enjoy the bed while you can, because we'll be sleeping on the ground probably from Hayes to the Dakotas.
Later in the night, Empty's response to someone's approach caused Nathan to awaken suddenly. His gun belt hung on the head of the bed, and quietly he drew one of the Colts.
Who is it?
Vivian. Oh.
Opening the door just enough for her to enter, he locked it behind her.
I'm cold, and I don't want to spend the night alone.
She came to him, trembling, and he held her tight. Their lips met once, twice, and when he turned back to the bed, she didn't hesitate. When Nathan awoke, the sun was streaming in through the window, and Empty sat by the door.
My God, it must be noon.
We still didn't sleep much. It took a while for me to get warm.
It did, for a fact.
I don't care how long it took. Because it was the first time for me.
You said...
My first time to do it because I wanted to. I'll never sell myself again if I starve.
You warm enough now?
Not really. Are you gonna stir up the fire again?
I might as well. I'll still reach Hayes before dark.
Hayes City, Kansas, February 4th, 1876. After a journey of not quite 50 miles, they settled into the town's hotel that evening. Nathan stretched Vivian out, belly down, across the bed. He then rubbed sulfur salve into all her saddle sores.
I'm not gonna be good company tonight.
I'm not expecting you to be. I've never seen so many saddle sores at one time in the same place. Most folks get used to it after a day or two, but before we ride out of here, I'll get two more tins of sulfur salve.
I've never had anybody fuss over me like this. I was 24 before I was with men, and I can't imagine any of them caring enough to rub salve into my sore behind.
They might have if you had been riddled with saddle sores, because you wouldn't have been able to lie on your back.
She tensed, and it took a moment for Nathan to realize what he'd implied.
I'm sorry, Vivian. I shouldn't have said that.
Why not? It's true. A whore makes a living on her back.
You said you were putting all that behind you. Don't you think of yourself that way?
You've been decent to me since the day I met you, and I suppose I just don't feel deserving of it.
Then you need to rid yourself of that feeling before you face your brother, unless you're prepared to tell him all you've told me.
Oh, God, I could never do that. Holly has always been so fiercely and unwaveringly proud. If he didn't kill me, he'd disown me.
Then Harley has some growing up to do. My little sister was raped and murdered by renegades when she was just 16, while I was with the Confederacy. If she had managed to stay alive, I wouldn't care what she'd done. She'd still be my sister.
When we find Harley, if we find him, I hope you'll stay with us for a while. He's in need of a friend, unless things have changed since I last saw him.
I reckon I'll be around for a spell. I haven't seen Bill Hickok in a long time. There was an unfortunate incident in 1971 when he shot and killed his own deputy. And as far as I know, he hasn't worn a lawman's star since. Bill's a hard drinker, and I get the feeling he may be nearing the end of the trail.
North Platte, Nebraska, February 8th, 1876. North Platte was strictly a railroad town, owing its very existence and its survival to the Union Pacific. A westbound was departing as they rode into town. Nathan and Vivian drew some attention, most of it unwelcome.
I'm Bradford Scott, editor of the North Platte Journal, and I never forget a face. Haven't I met you before?
No.
Ah, now I remember. An etching in the Kansas City Liberty Tribune. You're Nathan Stone, the gunfighter.
I'm Nathan Stone, and I don't claim any titles.
Ah, but you should. You're a legend on the frontier. Tell me something I can print. Anything.
All newspaper men worry the hell out of folks who only want to be left alone. Now vamoose, damn it.
The crowd heard. And they liked the joke, except for one rider who had a Colt thong to his right hip.
Nathan Stone, I'm calling you out.
Step into the cafe, Vivian, now.
She obeyed, standing behind the door so that she could see through the glass pane. Nathan's eyes never left those of his adversary, for they would warn him when the deadly moment arrived. Nathan judged him to be maybe 19, maybe not even that.
You're a fool, boy.
I'm not a boy, damn you. I aim to beat you.
When you're ready, then.
Nathan waited until the last possible second to draw, and his hand didn't move until the kid had cleared leather. The kid stumbled backward. For an agonized second, he seemed suspended. On his young face, a look of surprise. Then he folded like an empty sack, his pistol still clutched in his hand. In an instant, Vivian was by his side, weeping. Everybody, including the cook, spilled out of the cafe.
Is there a sheriff in town?
Otis Babcock. Sheriff, who the hell started this? What's self-defense in?
Yes, he pushed it.
Well, I reckon I can't contest that. But I want you out of here just as quick as you're able to saddle up and ride. You're bad medicine.
I'm also minding my own business. I've broken no law and I'll be here for the night. Now, if you have another hombre aiming to gain himself a reputation at my expense, you can talk some sense into him or measure him for a pine box.
With that, he took Vivian's arm and hustled her toward the hotel. Empty brought up the rear, knowing there had been trouble, not trusting these strangers. Most of those who had witnessed the gunfight were relating the details to those who had missed it. Scott, the newspaper editor, was in his glory. Nathan and Vivian reached the hotel, and when they were safely in their room, Nathan locked the door.
My God, what did he have against you? What had you done to him?
Nothing. He wanted to prove his gun was faster than mine.
But he was only a boy.
A boy with a gun.
That wasn't the first time, was it?
No, and it won't be the last. Not until I come up against the hombre whose gun is faster than mine.
You're living in the very shadow of death.
I reckon. But it's better than the alternative.
Nathan hadn't lighted the lamp, and he went to the window and looked out. Dirty gray clouds had moved in, and the night was black.
There'll be snow before morning, Vivian. Unwelcome as I am in this town, I don't aim to ride out in a blizzard. Winter can be hell on the high plains, with the temperature dropping to 40 below zero. We'll just have to make the best of it. Let's begin by getting to bed before it turns colder.
The storm struck with a vengeance during the night, and by morning the snow and the cold had an icy grip on the high plains.
God, it's cold in here. My ears are like ice.
Imagine what it's like outside.
I don't want to think about it. Let's just stay here.
We can't. We have to eat. And Empty needs to go outside.
So do I, but I'm not bearing my behind in this kind of cold.
There's the chamber pot. That's the best you're likely to get unless you aim to fight your way to the outhouse.
I'll take the pot. And blizzard or not, I'm hungry. Besides, your poor dog is miserable. He wants out.
Won't do him much good. I look for the snow to be so deep he can't hoist a leg.
The snow was deep, and it would be drifted much deeper at higher elevations. In the mountainous Dakota Territory, a horse wouldn't stand a chance. A path had been shoveled from the hotel to the outhouse and from the hotel to the cafe across the street. The wind swept in from the west, bringing with it more snow. The stove in the cafe roared while a fire crackled in the fireplace. There was an enormous coffee pot, and one of the cooks made the rounds, refilling tin cups. After the cook fed Empty, he paused to speak to Nathan.
Well, now, maybe I'm out of line, but there's some things you should know. Now, the kid that forced the fight yesterday was Dobie Sutton. Now, he's got two brothers, Dal and Dent. And there's their ma, Sabrina. They're the kind, if you cut one, they all bleed. They're hell on wheels, a lot of them. Now, that's why Sheriff Babcock wanted you out of town. The rest of them will likely be after you.
I'm obliged.
God, you only defended yourself. Can't the sheriff protect you from the others?
No, and I don't expect him to. The law offers no protection because these family clans are devilishly persistent, and they're all alike. Hurt one, and you have to fight the rest of them. You never know where the next bullet is coming from.
If it wasn't for this damn blizzard, we could just ride on.
Hell, it does me no good to ride on. If they're settling be done, I'd as soon settle it here. We'll wait out this storm right here in the hotel, and if this Sutton bunch wants my hide, they're welcome to try and take it. But I don't want you near me, out in the open. When we're done, you'll go on across the hotel, and I'll follow.
I don't like it. Get me a gun, and I'll stay with you.
No. I'm obliged to you for feeling that way, but I won't have them shoot you trying to get to me.
When they returned to the hotel, Nathan and Vivian took to the bed for warmth. It was late in the afternoon when a visitor arrived. Nathan cocked one of his Colts.
Who's there?
Otis Babcock. I want to talk to you.
I can't see that we have anything to talk about. I'm going nowhere until this storm blows itself out.
I don't expect you to, and that's not what I want to talk about. I'll wait in the lobby so as not to disturb your missus.
Damn it, I'll have to go talk to him.
He got up and got into his clothes. He stomped into his boots, strapped on his guns, and shrugged into his coat. Closing the door behind him, he made his way to the hotel lobby. A red-hot stove roared, and there Babcock waited. Nathan took a chair with his back to the wall.
I reckon you think I'm just an ornery old mossy horn that likes to make it hard on folks, but that ain't the case. I gotta live here, and it's a mighty easier when there's nobody shooting or being shot. Now, in case you ain't found out, the Sutton kid you salted down is the youngest of three brothers. Dal and Dent is as bad or worse than Dobie was, while their ma, old Sabrina, she's a ring-tailed wampus kitty. She carries a double-barrel sawed-off scattergun that'd drop a moose.
I've heard most of that. What are you leading up to?
For your own protection, until this storm blows over and you can leave town, I want to lock you up.
I appreciate your concern, Sheriff, but I can protect myself. Put me behind bars and I'd be fair game. Let me remind you that when I gunned down Dobie Sutton, he was about to shoot me. If you're so concerned with keeping the peace, I have a suggestion. Just lock up the Suttons until I'm gone.
Mm-mm, that's impossible.
Then allow me to suggest something. You go to the Suttons, tell them I'm not going to be pushed around. If they come after me, one at a time or all at once, I'll defend myself. And I'll make you this promise, Sheriff. I'll not harm a one of them unless I'm forced to. They come shooting, I'll shoot back, and I don't miss.
That's your last word?
It is. You keep that bunch away from me, and there'll be no trouble.
He turned away, and when he returned to his room, the door was standing open, and Vivian was gone. He reached the lobby just as Babcock was about to leave.
Damn you, Vivian's gone. You lured me away so they could take her.
I don't know what you're talking about. If they took her, what am I doing? Come on, I'll help you find her. All this snow, there's gonna be tracks.
The sky was still overcast and gray, and the storm wasn't over, but the snow had dwindled to a few flurries. There were two sets of footprints leading from the back door of the hotel. Deep as the snow was, the abductors had brought horses, and their tracks were easily followed. Few had ventured out into the snow, and it soon became obvious the trail was leading away from town.
My God, there ain't nothing up this way but a railroad depot.
I reckon it has a stove. All they need is a place to hole up just long enough to force me out into the open. Then they'll offer to swap Vivian for me.
You don't have to agree to that. If they harm the woman, they'll be breaking the law.
Sheriff, before this day's done, you're going to learn that some folks have no respect for the law. Get in the way and this bunch will shoot you as quick as they'll shoot me.
You're in bad company, Sheriff. This ain't your fight. Get on back to town.
Now you Suttons, pay attention. You have a woman in there who's done nothing to you. Let her go, or I'm placing you all under arrest.
Not by a jugful. We want the bastard that gunned down Dobie, and when we get him, we'll turn his woman loose.
Dobie was gunned down in a fair fight, a fight he started. I'll have no more shooting as a result of that. You're breaking the law.
You got just 5 minutes to start that gun thrower walking this way, you know? Then we'll strip this little gal and do some interesting things with her.
Sabrina Sutton, are you in there?
I'm here.
You and your sons are breaking the law. Now this is your last chance to back off and come out of it clean.
You heard our terms. You send us that killer, and we'll turn the woman loose.
I'll come over there, but only if Dal and Dent have the sand to face me. Dobie was a shorthorn full of brag, but not a grain of sand in his craw. I'm guessing it runs in the family. And his two big brothers are all mouth too, am I right?
Hell no. Start walking. We're coming out.
My God, you're not going to face both of them.
I am. There's no other way.
Them's long odds. Better if I side you.
No, I promise to face them alone. While their attention is on me, try to circle around and disarm the Sutton woman.
The one to your right is Dal, the other's Dent. Both of them is Sidewinder mean.
Sheriff Babcock moved on up the track from the depot, apparently to take refuge behind a crisscrossed stack of railroad ties. Nathan began his walk, knowing that when the moment came, he must somehow improve the odds. Not surprisingly, both the Suttons drew at the same time. But at that precise second, Nathan Stone seemed to stumble. He went belly down in the snow, Colt in his hands. Both the Suttons were driven backward into the snow and lay there, unmoving.
Damn you! You killed my boy!
Nathan was on his feet and running toward the depot. Up the track a ways, he could see Sheriff Babcock headed the same way. That shot meant that Vivian Stafford had been at the mercy of Sabrina Sutton and a loaded shotgun. Suddenly, Vivian stepped out. She wore the paisley dress, and the entire front of it was soaked with blood. Her eyes were on Nathan for a terrified moment, and then she collapsed face down in the snow.
Oh my God, the Sutton woman shot her!
But when Nathan reached Vivian and rolled her over, he found her looking at him. Her lips were moving, but it was a moment before she found her voice.
I killed her. Dear God, I didn't mean to, but she wouldn't let go of the gun.
Now, you done what you had to do, ma'am. Best go in there and see what they done to the railroad agent.
I'm taking Vivian back to the hotel. Can you walk?
Yes. I'm not hurt, but I want to get this dress off. Her blood is all over me.
I scared the hell out of me when I heard that shotgun blast. I was sure she'd killed you.
She was going to, but I grabbed for the shotgun and fought her for it. She wouldn't let go, and the muzzle of it was at her throat.
Well, it's all over now. I'd like for us to ride out of here today, but there'll be more snow tonight.
I'm beginning to see it your way. If the Suttons wanted you badly enough to kill me, they would have followed us. The storm kept us here, and as terrible as all this has been, I feel like we've settled it.
With them, maybe. There may be more in this town as foolish and glory-hungry as Dobie Sutton was. I reckon I can count on the damn newspaper man to spread word of it far and wide. I can see the headlines now. Nathan Stone, killer, guns down Nebraska family.
You didn't kill them all. I killed one of them.
It won't matter. Blaming it all on me makes a better headline.
Nathan was quickly proven correct. With the storm continuing, they went nowhere except the cafe. There they were ignored. Their orders were taken and their food was served in silence. Even Empty encountered hostility. The storm finally blew itself out, but they were unable to travel for another 2 days. On February 12th, they rode out, crossing the North Platte River. The new camp, Deadwood Gulch, was a dead-end canyon. Located within it were three camps, Crook City, Elizabeth City, and Deadwood. The most prominent of the three camps was Deadwood, and it was at the head of the canyon where the road ended. There was a main street that snaked in and out among the tree stumps and open holes left by the early arrivals. Along the street was what looked like a drunken string of hastily constructed frame buildings thrown up quickly, using mostly rough, still green boards. The only refinement appeared to be the boardwalks. What passed for the main street was ankle-deep in dust, but that would change when the rains came. Then there would be ankle-deep mud. Nathan and Vivian avoided the street because it was crowded with shoving, shouting men, horses, mules, oxen, wagons, buckboards, and two-wheeled carts. Among the array of buildings, two had poorly painted signs proclaiming them to be hotels. Nathan learned that the hotels charged $10 a day, with bathing privileges costing extra.
Somewhere there must be a canyon with water and an overhanging rim. Let's look for it.
The canyon, when they found it, had sufficient grass for their horses. It was deep enough, with enough rim overhang to provide shelter. A spring provided water.
It's so peaceful. It's hard to believe there's a mining camp so near.
I reckon we'll find prices in the cafes right up there with the hotels. If we can afford a coffee pot, a frying pan, and some grub, we can cook our own meals.
I don't want to become any more of a burden than I am already. All you promised to do was get me here.
My daddy taught me to always go just a little further than you promised. When you hire on, do just a little more than you're paid to do. Since I know your brother, I reckon I'll hang around until you find him. I want to see Wild Bill again, too, and he may still be in St. Louis setting up that expedition.
I wish we had thought to ask about Harley at the hotel. If he's here, he has to stay somewhere.
Unless he set up a camp like we have. When we ride in for grub, I'll ask about him.
When they reached the outskirts of the rip-roaring gold camp, Empty refused to go any farther.
Keep to the brush, partner. We'll look for you when we ride out.
The makeshift lobbies of the hotels were jammed with shouting, cursing men, recently arrived and seeking beds.
We'll go on to the mercantile for our grub. Maybe I can learn something there.
Nathan and Vivian wandered through the store, astounded at the boomtown prices. A coffee pot, an iron skillet, eating tools, tin cups, a side of bacon, a sack of coffee beans, and 5 pounds of cornmeal cost $40. As Nathan paid up, he struck up a conversation with the storekeeper.
Partner, I'm looking for a friend of mine. He's a red-headed gent. May or may not be a miner. And he's handy with a gun. Blows a mouth harp, too.
You're talking about Red. Just seeing he's handy with a gun ain't doing him justice, mister. With Winchester or Colt, he's downhill with a tailwind. He ain't bad on the harp, neither.
That's him. Where can I find him?
Can't. Till tomorrow. He rides shotgun for the Deadwood stage. Cheyenne to Deadwood and back to Cheyenne. They'll roll in tomorrow near 4 o'clock. Ain't no better shotgun than Red. No better driver than Johnny Ross.
I was afraid of that. He's taking the most dangerous job he could find.
He's likely earning more than most of the miners.
Yes, but at what risk? I'll have to talk some sense into him.
You do, and he's likely to put you on a fast train back to Virginia. A man makes his own way on the frontier, and the quickest damn way to lose him for good is to go after him with blinders and a lead rope.
I suppose you're speaking from experience.
I am. I thought you were an exception since you haven't asked me anything about myself.
I didn't consider it any of my business. But Harley's my brother, my only living kin.
Well, he's also a man, and I expect all the protection he needs he carries on his hip like I do.
Damn it, is that a woman's lot? Worrying over a man while he's alive and then grieving over him when he finally gets himself killed?
That's it. When you get down to the bare bones of it, a man ain't worth a damn, present company included.
Nathan Stone, I know better than that. I came to you in Dodge, broke, hungry, not knowing which way to turn, and you took me in. My own brother couldn't, and probably wouldn't, have been as kind and caring.
Your own brother may shoot me in the back when he learns I'm sleeping with his sister.
He'd better not say one word, or I'll tell him you rescued me from a whorehouse. If I was your sister, wouldn't you rather I'd be with one man instead of all the soldiers and cowboys in Kansas?
I reckon I would, given that choice, but I don't aim to come between you and your brother. It's been 10 years, and he may not be the same man I knew when we both wore the gray under General Lee.
Their camp under the canyon rim was peaceful. With Empty roaming around and the horses cropping grass nearby, Nathan felt secure enough. He lay awake, wondering what tomorrow would bring, wondering how Harley Stafford would receive his sister. There was something not quite right. Harley Stafford had come west, leaving his sister and his aging parents behind, allowing 10 years to pass without attempting to contact them. Would a man so uncaring welcome a sister he had obviously forsaken? The arrival of the stage was nothing less than spectacular. Obviously, it was the event of the week because it was the only link to the outside world. There was mail, newspapers not even a week old, and more women to liven up the saloons. Johnny Ross, the driver, seemed utterly fearless as he brought the team to a shuddering halt. Dust rose in a cloud, settling on the waiting throng, but nobody seemed to care. Driver and shotgun rider stepped down from the box. Harley Stafford, though older, had changed but little. He slid the shotgun into a boot alongside the box. Nathan looked at Vivian, and now that the time was at hand, she seemed afraid. He stepped forward and spoke.
Stafford.
The redhead turned, his hand on the butt of his Colt. Seeing no danger, he relaxed.
Yeah, I'm Nathan Stone. Remember the days in Easy Company under General Lee?
The Yanks shot us all to hell and then took us prisoner. We heard your platoon had been wiped out.
I heard the same about yours. I picked up some lead, along with a few months in Libby prison.
Glad you made it, Stone. And it's good to see you. I'm beat. I gotta get a few hours sleep before the turnaround back to Cheyenne.
Before you go, I have someone with me who you'll want to see.
Harley, it's me, Vivian.
What for God's sake are you doing here? This is no place for a woman.
I had nowhere else to go. You're all the family I have.
Oh, damn, I have nothing. I sleep in a bunk in the freight office between runs. What am I supposed to do with you?
She's your sister, Stafford, and she's gone through a lot getting to you. Can't you at least pretend you're glad to see her?
We got shot in the same war, Stone, but it ends there. Don't you preach to me.
Harley Stafford, you watch your mouth. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here.
Then you're his woman. Go with him. I have no place for you.
Nathan took Vivian's arm and led her away. Her face was pale, and she seemed in shock.
What am I going to do? He's all the family I have.
You're going to stay here until he gets used to you. You're blood kin, and unless he's a low-down skunk-striped coyote, he'll face up to that.
But I don't want you having to stay here because of me. Will you dig for gold?
I won't be staying because of you. I told you I want to see my friend Hickok again, and he'll likely be a while getting here. But I won't be digging for gold. There's something I haven't told you. I'm a saloon gambler. While I'm not exactly proud of it, I've made a living at it since I came west. There must be 30 saloons in this place, and I'll likely try my luck in some of them.
I want to go with you.
Well, a saloon is no place for a woman, Vivian. On the frontier, it's a place where men raise hell, cuss, fight, and kill one another. They'll do and say all the things a woman shouldn't see or hear.
Nathan, there's not a man in this camp who could do or say anything I haven't seen or heard. I refuse to squat over yonder in that canyon by myself.
You won't be by yourself. Empty will stay with you. He purely hates saloons.
Then he has better taste than either of us. I appreciate his company, but if you're going to gamble in the saloons, I'm going with you. I'll wear my riding clothes and stuff my hair under my hat.
Since they were already in town and Vivian had been virtually ignored by Harley, it seemed as good a time as any to see what Deadwood had to offer. They quickly learned that for every store, there were 3 or 4 saloons. They were so numerous that some of them had numbers instead of names. There was no order, and to this mecca of lawlessness had flocked prostitutes, pimps, gamblers, con men, pickpockets, mountain men, ex-buffalo hunters, and ne'er-do-wells of every imaginable stripe. Hey, sugar, which saloon are you in?
None of them. That's what you can expect, and it'll be worse than the saloons. How am I going to keep my mind on the cards while I'm keeping men away from you?
I'll wear one of your shirts. It'll be large enough to hide the upper part of me, and with my hair stuffed under my hat, I can pass for a man.
It was possible, Nathan decided, for her face had been tanned by wind and sun. When the Deadwood stage departed, Nathan and Vivian were there, but Harley Stafford seemed not to see them. The first time Vivian changed her appearance, she accompanied Nathan to saloon number 10, where he won $300.
That was fun. I like being a man.
Well, don't get used to it. You could end up sleeping by yourself.
When the Deadwood stage returned a week later, Nathan and Vivian weren't there to meet it. Let Harley Stafford wonder what had become of his sister. Again, Nathan had spent a successful afternoon in one of the saloons. And as he and Vivian were leaving, they encountered Harley Stafford about to enter.
Damn it, is this how you take care of my sister, dragging her into the saloons?
At least I've tried, and that's a hell of a lot more that can be said of you. You just gained a little ground, I think. Maybe it's not a bad idea having you go into the saloons with me. It'll give old Harley something to think about while he's riding shotgun from Deadwood to Cheyenne.
Spring came early, and by the 1st of April, grass had begun to green. The incessant west wind had lost its bite, and there was rain instead of snow. Nathan and Vivian seldom bothered meeting the Deadwood stage, but they were there the fateful day it arrived, with only Johnny Ross on the box. He managed the reins awkwardly with his left hand, and the right sleeve of his shirt was soaked with blood.
Where's Red?
In the coach. We've been robbed. 4 masked men, maybe 30 miles out. Red got one of them, but he's hard hit. Somebody get the doc.
Vivian pushed through the crowd, trying to reach the coach, and Nathan followed. He managed to get the door open, and what they saw wasn't encouraging. Harley Stafford lay on one of the seats on his back, and he had been hit more than once. From a nasty wound in his left thigh, blood still oozed, and the left side of his shirt was bloody.
He's alive, but not by much.
The doc's here. Let him through.
Doctor, I'm Nathan Stone, and this is Vivian, his sister.
I'm Dr. Wilkes, and I have a stretcher outside. Help me lift him out.
Nathan helped Wilkes remove Harley Stafford from the coach, and when he was on the stretcher, a burly miner took one end of it while Wilkes took the other.
May I stay with him, Doctor?
No. I don't know how badly he's hurt, and I want no distractions. In 2 hours, I should know whether or not he'll live. I'll talk to you then.
We might as well find us a comfortable place to wait.
I feel just terrible. I should have tried harder to get him to accept me. Now he may die hating me.
He doesn't hate you. I reckon he came west and hasn't done all that well, so he feels uncomfortable with you.
I didn't come looking for him because I believed he was successful, or for what I thought he could do for me. He's my kin, my brother, and that's all I cared about. Why couldn't he understand that?
Maybe he will. He'll be laid up a while, I expect. If he's the man I think he is, he'll see you in a different light.
Later that day, Nathan and Vivian went to the doctor's office. Wilkes had a grim look that Nathan didn't like.
He's still alive, but I had to dig the lead out of his side, and he's lost a lot of blood. The bone in his thigh has been damaged to some extent. When it mends, he'll walk with a limp. I'll need to keep him here for the next several days until the threat of infection has passed.
One of us can sit with him if need be.
And there'll be plenty of need for that later. He'll be laid up for a good 6 weeks. Miss Stafford, Johnny Ross here wants to talk to you. He's arranged for a room at one of the hotels for your brother when he's able to be moved.
It's not much of a hotel or much of a room, but it's the best the town has to offer. It's his for as long as he needs it.
We're obliged.
Fighting infection, Harley Stafford slept almost continuously for 3 days, awakening only when the doses of laudanum were lessened. At first, Wilkes allowed only Vivian to see him, and he refused to speak to her.
He just lies there.
Doctor, I want to talk to him.
Go ahead, but don't excite him. Should he thrash around, he could get that wound to bleeding again, and he can't afford to lose any more blood.
I don't aim to fight with him. If he fires up his temper, I'll leave.
Good.
Harley Stafford lay on his back, his eyes on the rough plank ceiling.
Harley, I want to talk to you.
Well, I don't want to talk to you.
You're afraid of something. What is it?
Damn you, I'm not afraid of anything or anybody, and you know it. Leave me be.
I won't leave you be. And I'm glad you're not afraid, because I aim to lay some truth on you that only a brave man could swallow. You're ashamed, Harley, and you don't want to face up to it, but by God, you're going to. Not so much for your sake, but for the sake of your sister. You came back from the war bitter, mad as hell, and not caring a damn for anybody but Harley Stafford. Your parents were old, in their declining years, and the war had stripped them of everything they owned. You left them, Harley, to be cared for by a girl who had only a garden for food and the clothes on her back. You pushed them out of your life for 10 long years, and now you're hiding your guilt behind a wall of don't care. But you do care, damn it, and it's tearing you apart.
Get out of here, you bastard! Get out!
I'm going, but I'll be back. If you're the Harley Stafford I knew, the man who survived Cemetery Ridge and Chancellorsville, you'll have the guts to stand up to this.
For 3 weeks, Vivian sat with Harley while he said little or nothing. Nathan spent his time in the saloons, winning more than he lost, returning to the canyon each evening to cook his supper and feed empty. Finally, when Nathan saw Vivian, she had a surprise for him. Harley wanted to see him. Harley no longer lay in the bed, but sat on the edge of it. There was no hostility in him when he spoke.
I need to talk to you before I talk to Vivian. You nailed my hide to the wall, forcing me to take responsibility for my own sorry life. I have nothing, Stone. No dreams, no hope. And now I have 2 bad legs. I'm afraid to promise Vivian any kind of life, because I'm not sure I can earn enough to keep myself alive. If I can count you as a friend, and God knows I need one, what should I do? What can I do?
I rode the rails, working security for the 18SF Railroad, and there is a chance you could be hired for the position I had. You'd be working out of Dodge City and earning more than you've ever made riding shotgun. If I can get Foster Hagerman to consider you, will you do it?
I'd jump at it, and thank God for the opportunity.
Nathan wrote out a lengthy telegram for Ross to send from Cheyenne. The message to Foster Hagerman highly recommended Harley Stafford as security for the AT&SF. Nathan asked for an immediate reply so that Ross might bring it with him on the return run. When the Deadwood stage next rolled in, Johnny Ross handed Nathan the response to his telegram. Nathan took the telegram to Harley.
Stafford accepted. Stop. Need him immediately. Stop. Foster Hagerman.
I'll have just about enough wages coming in to pay Dr. Wilkes and buy a horse.
You don't owe Dr. Wilkes anything, and you won't need a horse to get to Dodge. You're going to take the stage to Cheyenne. From there, you'll take the Union Pacific to Omaha. From Omaha to Kansas City, you'll take a steamboat, and when you reach Kansas City, you'll board an AT&SF westbound to Dodge.
It sounds wonderful, but we could never afford it.
Oh, but you can. Deadwood's paying your way. I've won $1,000 at the poker tables, and $500 of that goes to you.
That'll be enough to get you to Dodge and to keep you fed along the way.
Nathan, I can't let you do it. You've already done more than enough.
Harley, I'm a Reb by birth and a Western man by choice. I look out for my friends, fighting for them if need be. If the time ever comes when my back's to the wall, I hope my friends will remember.
That's a code a man can live with, and I'm making it my own. Should you ever have your back to the wall and I'm alive, I'll be there alongside you.